Boy, oh boy, just another day here at Cairo Radio. No big news to talk about, so let's bring in a guy that really doesn't have much to say.
Let's go. I love the LA women.
Yeah. That's Seattle Sweeties. Dre's had the pleasure of co-hosting with me a couple weeks ago, and then we exchanged, I thought, some very fun emails back and forth. And then it's funny, I sent him one more, and then he never, I thought, okay, I've offended him, or he's done joking around with me. Dre's, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, how's it going? It is great to be back, man, in the booth with you.
Yes, nice. Good to have you in the booth. All right, Abby, in the news. All right, I'd like to steal a page from a couple of my favorites, Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder, throughout the entire show. If I feel that things are getting a little too heated between the two of us, Dre's, we're going to go right into this, baby. What is Paul McCartney look young there? More of it.
Sign on my piano, keyboard, oh Lord.
By the way, I gotta say, I bought this 45 just to show you how down I am with the brothers. My brother and I bought this 45, so you should know, Dre's, I'm down with the brothers because we bought this one when Stevie Wonder, Paul McCartney, Ebony and Ivory sitting on a giant keyboard.
Okay, so you're down with us.
I bought the 45.
Hey, I guess that gets you in. You're in the club. You can come to the barbecue now, I guess. That's it. That's it. That's the prerequisite, the 45. We don't care how you vote. We don't care about your politics. We don't care if you stand for us. We don't care about Breonna Taylor. Just buy the 45 and you're in. I appreciate it, man.
All right, so here we go. Last night, two officers are shot in Louisville as protests erupt nationwide. Breonna Taylor's case. We got a bunch of sound. This is without Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney.
Officer down, right there. Officer down.
It was a frantic scene around 8:30 last night after two Louisville police officers were shot. Interim Police Chief Robert Schroeder says a suspect is in custody.
One is in alert and stable. The other officer is currently undergoing surgery and stable.
Breonna Taylor!
Although protests started peacefully, some people set trash cans on fire. Around 100 people were arrested. The protests came after months of waiting for a decision in the killing of Breonna Taylor. Taylor was killed on March 13th as police executed a search warrant for drugs and money. Neither were found. Her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, says he believed the police were intruders, so he fired a single shot which hit Mattingly in the thigh. Police returned fire. Six bullets hit Taylor.
Did somebody kick in the door inside my girlfriend?
Walker has maintained police did not identify themselves before they used a battering ram on the door. Cameron said the officers did knock and announce.
That information was corroborated by another witness.
Law professor Colin Miller has worked with Taylor's family. He says he believes the grand jury did not hear all of the evidence.
And we had several witness accounts from neighboring apartments, the neighbors saying we never heard the police knock and announce.
Taylor's family attorney, Ben Crump, called the decision to not charge any officer in Taylor's death outrageous and offensive.
It continues to disrespect the black women that have permeated in American society since they first brought us here in 1619.
All right. Okay. Then there's a bunch of sound from her attorney, the family's attorney representing the family, saying the transcripts, demanding transcripts from the grand jury. And then Ohio State. Let's see, a bunch of sound here. You want to hear from the her attorney, Mr. Crump, talking about the grand jury transcripts?
Why not?
Okay. I'll just say this about grand jury. I didn't realize this. Grand jury goes back to Charles II, and the idea was they want to bring charges up against a particular person, maybe a king or something, and the jury is absolutely in secret. You are not allowed to tell who is in the grand jury. The people that are being brought into the grand jury as defendants, their names, nothing is released. It's all about secrecy because what they're afraid of, that you bring this thing to the grand jury, and then the grand jury just looks at the evidence. Yes, there's enough evidence to go forward. It was a way of sort of protecting the integrity of the individual. And that's why the grand jury, just a bunch of common people all in there, could be anywhere between 12 and greater number. And the only person that is in the room with them is the prosecutor. So the prosecutor steps in, gives the information, and normally they just go, they whack away at any witnesses. And in most cases, if it was in a regular jury with the judge, the prosecutor would not be able to get away with the sort of attacks that they normally make. And the indictment against grand juries is they would indict a ham sandwich, that they could indict anything. But when it comes to the police, not many indictments come down. And this is what they say is part of the problem. Police normally work with the prosecutor. Person comes in, we arrest the guy, prosecutor says, what'd you get him for? Got him for this. Then the prosecutor either, you know, pleads it out or takes it to trial. So they do work with police. So in this case, the prosecutor has to go in, present stuff to the grand jury. Are they presenting stuff to the grand jury too easily? They're not hitting hard enough because the police have a relationship with the prosecutor? Or do we just trust that the prosecutor and the grand jury are going to do their job to find if there's enough evidence to bring against the police officer? So that's sort of the whole history I can give you in about 1 minute and 10 seconds on what the people say could possibly be a problem, which is the prosecutor didn't go hard enough on some of the witnesses. All right.
Yeah.
So now
I, you know, obviously I'm not in the room with them, but yeah. I would tend to agree. Right. We're seeing a consistency over and over and over that when the police are tied to this, for some reason, it's not working. So that tie between prosecutor and police officer or police organizations is obviously not bringing about justice.
Well, you're assuming no justice. So what would you charge those? So the one guy gets charged for wanton. I read about him. He wasn't even up in the doorway. He was like out in the parking lot firing away. That guy gets two or three charges against him, wanton disregard. I mean, they fired that guy. He's going to look at anywhere between $10,000 and 5 years. So they're going to get him. So the other guys, what would you charge them with?
Well, at the end of the day, if you're saying, okay, we're charging someone, let's start here with the wanton endangerment, right? You're charging someone with wanton endangerment for shooting at a wall. Well, that in that same process, Brianna was hit and Brianna was killed. What you're saying is that you have a responsibility, right, to make sure when you're coming into this apartment, you're firing, you know where you're firing, you know who you're firing at. And so if you're going to charge someone with wanton endangerment for hitting a wall, I think he has to be responsible for everything. And I say the exact same thing for these other cops. I look and I go, if you're coming in, and I know this comes down to the argument of did they announce themselves and did they not announce themselves, right? I have a responsibility. If you come into my home right now and anyone comes into my home, I don't – the same way we often say about police officers, when they show up, they don't know what's on the other end of that door.
Yeah.
They don't know what's in someone's house. It's the exact same thing. If someone's coming into my home, hey, man – I don't have a right to assume that you're coming in here with butterflies and lilies.
Yeah.
No, you're coming in here because you want to harm somebody.
Yeah.
So I have a gun and you're going to meet it.
Yeah.
Right. And so they were fired upon. Right.
Yes.
And them being fired upon, they have a responsibility to know where they're going and they should have announced themselves.
Okay. So. But the thing is, it's a horrible situation where they go in and they get shot at and then they shoot, and I forget, like 36 rounds or something. The guy that gets charged with the wanton thing, I don't think he was in the doorway with the other ones. The other two guys fire, I don't know how many rounds in there. They think, what would you charge them with? Because they are getting fired on, and basically the rule of the bar that you have to kind of jump over is, would they also believe, if they were in a similar situation to these police officers, would they believe that they could possibly be injured or died? And is the action of that police officer justified? So the shot comes at them, the guy gets hit in the leg and the femur, and then they open fire in that hallway. The two of them, Brianna Taylor and her boyfriend, who's now discharged with a weapon, are at the end of that hallway. They're shooting down into the hallway, returning fire. It's a horrible situation, right? But the thing is, what do you charge the two with? The grand jury couldn't find any reason. Of the six homicide charges, there was nothing they could bring against them.
Yawn with this whole grand jury thing, right? We're done with that. In regards to what do you charge them with? You charge them with murder. You have a responsibility when you come to that door. You need to pronounce yourself. You have neighbors saying no one heard anything. So they're going to say, well, we pronounce ourselves. You didn't pronounce yourself. And because of that, now you have a situation where, of course, you were fired on. You're now breaking and entering into someone's house. They fire at you. You fire back. And Brianna gets killed. At the end of the day, officers have to be responsible for protocol, for following protocol, for doing what the, you're a professional. Mm-hmm. You have a job to do,
yeah.
And we expect you to do your job correctly.
Okay. So what you're resting the whole case on is the fact that they didn't announce themselves.
Well, because it spins three or four different, a chain reaction comes into play, right? You don't announce yourself, now you get fired on, and that's your justification to fire back,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And so I'm saying everything that happens after that is on you, right? You end up murdering someone, right? Because now you're, in essence, you're kind of in the want and endangerment type of place, right? You're now shooting back. You don't know who you're shooting at. You're shooting at the wrong person. Oh, obviously, because you end up killing Breonna Taylor,
right.
And not the same person who shot you.
Right. There is in the grand jury testimony, apparently there was a witness at 12:37 that says they heard the knock. The cops also said they also knocked on the door and announced they were coming in. The two come out of the bedroom and stand at the end of the hallway. She gets shot six times or seven times or something like that. He doesn't get shot once. So did he right. fire the gun and run back into the bedroom, or was he standing behind her? We don't know. No one knows. Yeah. But the case is, this is the system that we have. They charge the one guy. The other two, they can't find any reason to charge. So that's it. So you can't march through the streets and say no justice, no peace, because what you're basically saying is no peace until we get the verdict that we want. Well, this is the system that's in place, and this is the way it works. You bring the grand jury up. They look at the evidence. Now, the grand jury could have said, you know what? There's enough evidence to move forward on trial. I did find this, that some prosecutors, because they are elected officials, sometimes I don't want to have to deal with this, so I'll send it to a grand jury, let the grand jury make the decision, so then therefore I don't have to take the heat on it. So sometimes prosecutors will kick it to a grand jury. The grand jury then goes, yeah, there's enough evidence, take it to trial. That's basically the whole thing. Now, in this case, the prosecutor said, because it was incredibly hot, let's give it to the grand jury, let them decide. There's a bunch of folks in there. They can look at it and determine whether or not there's evidence to go to trial and then charge these three officers. The thing is like, do you want to just keep marching through the streets until you get the mob verdict that you want?
Well, I don't see it as a mob verdict. Marching through the streets. First off, I'll say yes, absolutely. Take to the streets, right? At the end of the day, people, you can't be surprised. The same way I'm not surprised by what came out of this grand jury process, you can't be surprised at people marching in the streets. They have a right to, they need to. People have a right to express their pain, their frustration with the system.
Uh-huh.
This is a process, right? Changing the system is a process. And so, fortunately, this is going to lead to change down the road. It's inevitable. It's going to happen.
But what,
right?
What changed, Dre? There is the prosecutor, there's defense, there's the judge, there's the jury, there's the grand jury. What changes in the thing? Do you want to get you want to get qualified immunity out of there so police can be held to a different standard than everybody else, and you can just take that person, that cop, and put him on the stand? And then...
I think police should be held to the same standard as anyone else. I don't have a problem saying everyone should be held to the same standard.
Well, they're not. They do get a special thing. Cops have a different standard. That they're held a different standard. Qualified immunity meaning like, if a regular person were to do that, they would probably go to trial and probably go to prison. Cops have a little bit more protection in them because they're given far more power. They even have more power than the president of the United States. They can legally kill people, right? That's the way
right.
the thing
and
is
I'm
set
saying,
up.
Right. And so the idea being there's going to be adjustments to that, right? To all of these things, we have a system that is currently constructed that is not working. And it's through these processes that it forces us to look at the system and go, we don't like it. What do we need to change? And those slight, small adjustments, I'm hopeful will get us to where we want to be in time. But the idea that this system, the way we have it, it's just currently not working.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, the Ohio State, is it this the Ohio State? The Ohio State president sent this a little gem out.
Breonna Taylor deserves justice. And this does not feel like justice.
Okay, right there. So the justice is the system that was done. This doesn't feel like justice, so...
We cannot accept what has happened in Louisville.
So she's saying, don't accept this. Don't accept what the grand jury has said.
We grieve the tragic and senseless loss of Breonna Taylor, a daughter, a friend, a niece, a loved one, who was unarmed and asleep. The breakdown in the justice system...
Was not asleep.
The killings of unarmed black and brown people in our country has become all too familiar, tragically. This isn't going to stop until we create an anti-racist world. We must come together to draw strength from each other and advance our collective vision for a better world where we one day have justice for all. There is much work to be done.
Okay, that is Christina M. Johnson, who, by the way, used to work in New York. She was the president of a school there in New York, and a bunch of people were really mad at her, said that she didn't do enough for diversity. And she had a number of black students blasting away at her. So this is her way of saying when they moved her to Ohio State, look at this, she's woke as can be. Do you think that's responsible for the president of a college to say that there's no justice and that we need to continue to fight? Does he think this is make things better for the street cops of Louisville to the Rashad and for all the other riots that went on for this person to say this, where you say that this is the system that's in place, we accept the grand jury's decision, and would that be better, or do you want to just keep stoking the flames?
Well, stoking the flames, we have to be honest. We have to have a conversation. There's nothing wrong. She's a citizen as much as anyone else. The idea that her speaking her truth and her perspective of it is fanning the flames is nonsense. Well, everyone needs to be able to have an opportunity to speak their truth and their perspective on this, because we are collective. We're a society. People are hurting. This is not the time to be silent at all.
Okay. Well, she's not just speaking her. She is representing Ohio State University. That's the president of Ohio State University saying, don't accept it.
She's still a citizen.
But I know.
Don't accept it. She is speaking not just for herself, but for Ohio State, for the people that she represents, not just the school, but every one of us, if you will, has a contingency of people that follow us. Yeah, speak out. Okay. Why should we continue to, what you're asking for is politically correct, play the game, toe the party line, be quiet, and let's just be quiet, hush, hush, and move back to business as usual. No, be frustrated. Be human. Step out. Be frustrated and say, no, this is not okay. And as the president, I'm willing to step out and speak out because I care about life. I mean, hence the phrase Black Lives Matter, but I care about this black woman's life and the fact that this is not justice, and we all know it's not justice. So what does it say? Something's wrong with the system. Let's fix the system until it can achieve justice.
Why don't we?
Love it.
I just play that because I don't want to yell at you. Tracy Taylor?
What, you want to yell at me then?
I'll yell at you. What the? Okay. What is it with the people with the signals? Nobody's using the blinkers anymore. It's crazy out there.
That's what I say every single day, of course.
All right, here we go. Tracy's in. Sorry, I didn't hit the right button. Jimmy T, my other black friend's like, what the hell? What about me? Blowing up my phone over here. It's ready to be right now. Okay, fine, Jimmy. All right. Dre's joining us from L.A., where you have I said to somebody here at Cairo, I forget the boss's name. The guy gets fired? The guy?
There's Mike and there's Brian.
Yeah, who's the guy? Who else was that? He's gone. What was the other person?
Oh,
whatever. I said, listen, I think Dre's has already got like a big career. Aren't you already like producing all sorts of music and working on your own stuff and doing like movies and TV soundtracks and things like that?
Man, you know what? I'm blessed to be able to write some music. Matter of fact, this past Sunday night, before the Hawks game, right before that game, they played one of my songs as an intro. So I write music for television and television shows and movies and stuff like that. So I'm doing okay.
Did you know right before the Hawks game, they played one of your songs for what? What was it? No, not what it song it was, but like at what point? Was it during a commercial or?
No, it was like going into the Sunday night. It was like going into one of the breaks for Sunday night. So, you know, they'll play music while they're kind of showing players, you know, working out and stuff like that. And they're getting ready to start doing some commentary. Yeah, they played one of the songs there. So it's a song that I wrote specifically for like sporting events and stuff like that. So it sits in a library in different just different companies will use it for whether it's basketball, football, stuff like that.
Did they call you ahead of time, or you just sort of sitting there watching, hey, that's my song?
You know what? It's actually like that. Hey, there's my song. So I'm just sitting around, and it's in a library. I don't keep up with some of that stuff. I have kind of a team that manages that, and I'm not like being all braggy or whatever, but it happens a lot. So I just stopped being like, tell me every time so that I can know and tweet it out and tell the world. Nah, I'm good. I'm not really that type of person. So,
and people can buy it for like a certain amount of money, right? And then they have use of it. That's how it works.
Yeah, so the station might do it. ESPN might purchase it or whatever network is using it. I mean, unfortunately, I didn't write Ebony and Ivory. I wish I did. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because right now, I mean, we're playing it on the radio. And
well,
I mean,
I've moved on to something else, by the way, to keep the peace between the two of us. I've moved
we'll
on
forever
to
be Ebony and Ivory.
Celine Dion and R. Kelly. And now comes a pedophile, R. Kelly. I just looked up online famous duets between black people and white people, and I've got a whole list of them. So we're going to play them throughout the entire show, if that's okay with you, Drace.
Hey, I'm good with it. I don't like the fact that we're giving R. Kelly streams, but I mean, whatever.
I mean, the first one I clicked on. All right. Inside student-led movements to depolarize college, just in general. If you go into a college campus, you find most of the time it's fairly liberal. The professors are liberal. The conservatives that are there, they meet secretly in some guy's house, and they don't want to talk, and they don't want to say anything because they're afraid it'll affect their grades. And often at college campuses, if you invite somebody from the right, there's protests and fires and things like that because words hurt, words are violence. We can't have that. So these people, both left and right, have decided, let's see if we can possibly have discussions without people screaming and yelling or doing the heckler's veto, which is just to yell the person off the stage. Here is the promotional video. Oh, it's got R. Kelly music underneath it. Here we go.
Dear America, we're better than this. After nearly 250 years of existence, it's not a new idea that people with profound differences can come together to self-govern. America has always been a contest of ideas between people who don't look alike or think alike. But now, especially in Washington, we no longer see each other as competitive partners in figuring out complicated problems, but as the enemy. We say it's time to respectfully rebel, or rebelliously respect. We are pairs of friends and colleagues who have kept relationships strong despite our political differences. And believe us, to adore someone who sees the world fundamentally different than you is a life-changing joy.
Okay, so you get the general idea. They get this is the way it used to be, I assume, on college campuses prior to, what, the 90s, where you could have two different debates going on and people wouldn't scream and yell and set things on fire and hit people over the head with bike chains. This is not something new. Unfortunately, it feels like it is new. Were you ever involved in any of those debates and stuff in college, Trace?
Oh, man, I was a debate guy. I mean, I started at Franklin High. I started there. I was on the debate team there. Uh-huh. Mock trial team was dope and then moved on. And then in college, yeah, did some of it, but more so the debates in the lunchroom than actually on a team.
Were you respectful of the other person's opinion?
You know what? I'm a respectful guy, you know, but the way I move, if you don't know me, you can take it wrong because my energy sometimes goes from zero to 100, but I don't mean nothing by it. Yeah, I'm definitely a respectful person. This just feels like the new generation finally recognizing what normalcy is like. They're like, oh my God, you mean we can actually disagree and be civil and all? It's like, to me, to them, this is like some amazing new concept. But I think it's dope that they're doing this on college campuses. It needs to happen because we have a whole generation that is literally learning, is growing up without being civil, right? So they're choosing sides because they think they have to, right? I have to choose liberal. I have to choose conservative. And to me, this is the way you get humanity back to, like, not only civility. I think we're going to find ourselves, like, for me, as an African-American, this is huge because we end up picking a side. And I don't believe African Americans are liberal at all, right? Like, we are much more in a lot of ways conservative besides racism, right? Like, conservatives have chosen money and racism, and that's why we won't choose their party or their ways of moving. But other than that, predominantly, we tend to line up with a lot of their belief system, just not their how-tos, how to get to what we're trying to get to. So we agree with the premise, but we don't agree with how you get there.
As a conservative, here's what I find. that conservatives are some of the least racist people I know because they actually would like to see a black person and a white person just compete. And the idea of treating somebody because of the color of their skin that they need extra help, it seems to be unfair to the individual. You're assuming right off the bat that they need the help from the white guy. It's the same way that when Johnson said, listen, it's not fair to take somebody out of chains, put them on the starting line and have them be able to compete. So what he's basically saying in return is, I'll tell you what, so we'll put you on the starting line, but depend on us, black guy. Depend on us. We are the white people, and we will help you. We will do everything. So you don't have to worry about competing. Just look to us, and we'll make sure that we feel good about what we've given you. And you always come to us, because ultimately, in the end, we have total and absolute control of your destiny, because we will be the great provider for you.
Well, actually, if you don't mind, I think some of that narrative makes sense when you think about the left, right? But when you think about the right, what I tend to see with conservatives more so, it would be like sitting down to a Monopoly game and someone has already been playing Monopoly for like 2 hours. And then I sit down at the table and you're going to hand me a couple of $100 and roll the dice. But all of the hotels and all the houses have already been bought up.
Yeah.
So it's not lean on me. Yeah, I'm going to need help because I'm sitting down at a Monopoly game where you own houses and hotels. And as soon as I roll the dice and I land on your property, I'm going to have to pay up. So the idea that we're just going to start at the starting line, our starting point just isn't the same. So it becomes disingenuous from the conservatives because it doesn't honor the story or the narrative of what's happened in America. So they eliminate that part of it and say, well, let's just be equal. How can we are equal as humans, but we don't have an equal starting point. So
yeah. By the way, you think all conservatives are rich?
No, I'm talking about the concepts. I'm not talking about the humans.
Okay.
I know a ton of conservative people who are really good people. I'm talking about the concepts that tend to come out, the concepts that tend to come out of the party. I know a ton of conservative people who are friends of mine who are really cool. We disagree on some things, but, you know, when you hold, actually, this is what this whole college movement is about. It's about getting away from, I think both parties have these extremists on the right, extremists on the left,
right.
And those views tend to dominate. And so this will allow those views not to dominate.
Always the case. Yep. All right, let's go. Here we go. Graze is there. I'm assuming you have bowled a perfect game before, right? Graze? Hello? Oh, sure, he left.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, and I can hear you. Have you ever bowled a perfect game?
Never in my life.
Well, there's a lot we can learn from this lovely older lady who TV, radio, news organizations love stories like this.
Hang on. Arlene!
Oh, wait. Oh, I got to start from the very beginning. Hang on. Jacob, why'd you put the story in here? I don't care about this lady.
I've been bowling since I was 27.
I mean, God love her. She's been bowling since she was 27.
7 years old, and that's a lot of bowling. All right.
With the form of a 20-year-old. An entourage backing her, and so much energy. Sarah Lyons does not act her age.
You are 32 years old?
No, I'm 97. Going to be 97 in November the 30th.
All right.
So when she scored a no-tap 300, knocking down 9 or more pins
Grace,
with
every
ball.
I had all strikes in a row. Not an open frame at all.
A first for anyone at Kennedy Lanes in McKees Rocks.
And that's hard. It's hard for a woman to do that, especially seniors. Come on, Arlene. Straighten your arm out.
Lyons.
Oh, look, you're yelling at her friend Arlene.
Doesn't just toss out the strikes.
I belong to two card clubs. 7 years I jog, worked Meals on Wheels for 15 years, took care of my husband. He had Alzheimer's for 5 years.
A focus on family keeps her going.
Are they going to ask her what's the secret? Are they going to ask her?
Good health, and he gave me a good family.
And a good right arm with a positive outlook to keep her young.
No.
I guess it's how I feel inside. I just have to keep going. I won't give up. I won't give up no matter how old I get.
Okay. Jacob. Grace, I'm sorry. You're in L.A. That's not the kind of stories they run in L.A. You guys, you're big time there. But here in little town Seattle, with a 97-year-old lady that bowls like a 20-year-old all day long. You understand, my friend?
Hey, I love it. I love it.
You don't love it.
Hey, age. I mean, she's 97.
Oh,
what are
please.
You gonna do? She's 97. You know?
I went all the way to England. I know. I went all the way to England once to interview the last surviving Titanic person, Milverin Gladys, or Nick Gladys, G-L-A-D-I-D-Y-S. Milverin, can you tell us what it was like on that fateful night?
I don't want to. I'm tired and I want to go back to bed.
Like, we've come a long way to talk to you.
I don't care. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm sick and tired of it. Like, get away from me!
It's like, okay.
Oh, God, I love it. I don't care. I still love it. She's 97. She's bowling.
I don't want to talk about Titanic. I want to go bowling.
All right.
Have you ever bowled a 300 in your life?
Just last night.